And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, because there might just be something that you want to get involved in, something you want to comment on. You know, you might want to take some notes, is what I'm saying. Tomorrow in Sacramento, here's the chance you've been waiting for. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is going to be holding a public hearing on their misguided proposal to delist gray wolves across most of the United States. And public comment period on this proposal has been extended to December 17th, but the hearing in Sacramento is tomorrow. I'll give you more updates on that in a second. I want to make sure you're aware of the news. The Fish and Wildlife Service has decided to hold a public hearing in Sacramento. It's our best chance to stand up and fight for wolf conservation. It's happening tomorrow, Friday, November 22nd in Sacramento. We need you to stand up and make your voice heard. Your presence will have a huge impact in our fight to stop this delisting. Hope you'll consider joining wolf advocates from across California to testify face-to-face in front of officials from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And once again, that hearing is tomorrow, Friday, November 22nd, from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. And that'll take place at the Marriott Courtyard in the Cal Expo, Sacramento. And I want to thank Jamie Rappaport-Clark, Defender of Wildlife, for this update. If you want more information, go to www.defenders.org. Coming up December 4th is the Santa Cruz Puma Project presentation. That's going to be happening Wednesday, December 4th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Loudon Nelson Center Auditorium. Join us for a presentation of the Santa Cruz Puma Project. Wildlife ecologist Chris Wilmers will discuss his study of mountain lion habitat fragmentation in the Santa Cruz Mountains, including the process of applying GPS collars, information on where those lions are going and how they're getting run over, and the effects of roads and houses on mountain lions. If you want more information, go to santacruzpumas.org for more details. But if you want to go to the presentation on December 4th at the Loudon Nelson Center at 7 p.m., go to SC Puma Project Presentation at eventbrite.com. That's scpumaprojectpresentation.eventbrite.com, and they have free tickets there. You'll need one to get in, but they are free, so go to scpumaprojectpresentation.eventbrite.com to get your free tickets. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. They write, our season has gotten off to a deadly start with early snows bringing at least 100 buffalo across Yellowstone's western boundary over the past couple weeks. Unfortunately, most of them have been shot by eager hunters waiting at the border. We now know of 53 wild buffalo killed this fall, with 51 being shot along the western boundary near West Yellowstone, Montana, and 2 killed near the northern boundary near Gardner, Montana. Most of those buffalo were shot by tribal hunters with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. The Crow tribe, we have learned, is preparing to assert treaty rights by joining in the hunt. The Park Service has asked tribes to shoot more bulls than cows. Thanks to the new law passed by Montana's notoriously anti-buffalo legislature and signed by Governor Steve Bullock last spring, the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has established a hotline to keep hunters apprised of the exact location of buffalo in the state. Their message betrays buffalo even when they are not in legally huntable areas, which has resulted in hunters casing residential neighborhoods with their rifles, waiting for buffalo to step back into the hunting zones. With so many buffalo under the gun, it's very unfortunate that we only have 2 volunteers currently at camp, in addition to our crew of seasonal coordinators. We are in great need of volunteers to help document the killing and provide outreach and education to hunters. We especially need help from now until the first couple of weeks of December. With coordinators having so many responsibilities around our headquarters, it is very hard to keep patrols filled. Please, if you have even a week or two to spare, we would be so grateful for your help. We have a great crew, and the small numbers create a fun, close-knit spirit. We also have an awesome harvest feast and celebration to look forward to at the end of November. If you feel you can help out, please email or call our volunteer coordinators as soon as possible. That email address is volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org, volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org, or phone 406-646-0070. I'll give you that number again in just a minute. If you can't join us in person, please make a donation or send some merchandise in support of our work. As a grassroots nonprofit composed of most dedicated people you'll ever meet, every little bit goes a long, long way. If you want to send something to Buffalo Field Campaign, this is their address, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip is 59758. And their phone number, if you want to volunteer, call 406-646-0070. Also give them a call to see what they really need at 406-646-0070. And you can find out about all of this and more at their wonderful wild webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And a Russian court has granted bail to two of the 30 Greenpeace protesters. I actually think that that number has gone up since this story came out. This was a few days ago. And this story is reporting by Maria Zatkova, writing by Gabrielle Prosinska, editing by Steve Gutterman of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Sorry, I can't pronounce those Russian names very well. A Russian medic and a freelance journalist were among 30 people arrested for a Greenpeace protest against offshore Arctic drilling, were granted bail on Monday in a case that has drawn fierce criticism abroad. Colin Russell, an Australian, was denied bail by a separate court earlier on Monday. He was a radio operator on the Arctic Sunrise, the Greenpeace ship used for the September 28th protest. Western leaders, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel, have expressed concern to Russian President Vladimir Putin over the case. And Western celebrities have voiced support for the Greenpeace campaigners. Ex-Beatle Paul McCartney has also asked Putin to help secure their release. The 30 arrested over the protest in which activists tried to scale the offshore oil rig that is crucial to Russians' drive to tap Arctic natural resources face up to 7 years in jail if convicted of hooliganism. The court ruled that Yekaterina Zaspa, a Russian medic on the Arctic Sunrise, who was not among those who tried to climb the rig, could be released on 2 million rubles, about $61,300 bail. The judge gave a similar ruling to Denis Sinyakov, a 36-year-old photographer who was on board the Arctic Sunrise when Russian Coast Guard officials forced their way on after the protests. Courts have repeatedly denied previous bail requests from all 30 people, whose term of custody ends November 24th. But the judge at Zaspa's hearing said there were no grounds to extend her arrest for another 3 months. The 37-year-old smiled as she heard the ruling from a cage in the courtroom. It was not immediately clear why the courts agreed to release the two Russians on bail, but to extend the term of custody for Russell, who had not tried to scale the rig. "I'm here to defend my innocence. I have not committed a crime," said Russell, who was led into court in handcuffs and confined to a defendant's cage. "I have not lifted a hand in an angry manner ever in my life. I have never been violent." In justifying bail for Sinyakov, the judge said he was a Russian citizen and married with a child, suggesting he was less likely to flee Russia. Investigators said the arrest should be extended to prevent all 30 from fleeing abroad. A ruling in the custody hearing of another Russian was expected later on Monday. More bail hearings for the foreigners were scheduled for Tuesday, and I believe that at this point about five of them have actually been released from prison, starting with a Brazilian protester. The case against the Arctic 30 has descended into high farce, Greenpeace representative Mads Christensen said in a statement. "They should all be released from prison. This is a scandal. This bears no relation to administration of justice. We will do everything we can to get our people out. Greenpeace, which says the protest was peaceful and the charges are unfounded, has been voicing alarm over the rush for Arctic's energy resources, which it says threatens the region's pristine and unique environment. It hopes the release of the 30 campaigners who are from 18 different nations will be secured by Friday, when the Hamburg-based International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea is expected to rule in a case the Netherlands lodged against Russia. The Netherlands is where the Arctic Sunrise is registered. But Russia is boycotting that case, which means it is unlikely to adhere to the court's ruling. The 30 activists had initially been charged with piracy, which is punishable by up to 15 years in prison. President Putin has said they were clearly not pirates, but they violated the law. The current charges of hooliganism carry up to a 7-year sentence. And here's the forest update for the month of November. The forest update is prepared by Jody Frediani, forestry consultant for the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club. And we thank her for her monthly updates. There's a couple of new timber harvest plans, THP 1-13-082 Santa Cruz. The owner is Peterson et al. Consists of 121 acres in the Boulder Creek watershed near the Boulder Creek Golf and Country Club. Owners are Leslie Keedy, Roy Kaler, Richard Guerrero, James Guerrero, Carol Rhodes, Michael Currier, James and Ruth McCaw, and Joe Culver is the registered professional forester. Another new timber harvest plan is THP 1-13-107 Santa Cruz, filed by the city of Watsonville. The C. Vaughn and J. Culver are the registered professional foresters. Grizzly Flat is adjacent to Rattlesnake Gulch and Shingle Mill Gulch. This plan was submitted on November 1st, but has not yet undergone first review, or if it has, the results have not yet been posted on CAL FIRE's FTP site. Coming up is a talk on redwood forest ecology, fire logging, and natural recovery by Dr. Will Russell. That will take place on December 10th at 6:30 p.m. at Cubberley Community Center, Room H1, 4000 Middlefield Road in Palo Alto. This talk is presented by the Committee for Green Foothills and the Sierra Club Loma Prieta Chapter. If you'd like to go, please go to cgfforest.eventbrite.com. That's cgfforest.eventbrite.com for free tickets. And for more information, visit greenfoothills.org. The Soquel Demonstration State Forest has been doing large wood installations in Soquel Creek. The Soquel Demonstration State Forest has completed 4 large wood installation projects in Soquel Creek to improve fish habitat. They have a 5th that will be implemented in 2014 as part of a bank repair project along Hines Mill Road, the main access into the forest through the Olive Springs Quarry. The National Marine Fisheries Service required a fish-friendly repair. This project has been several years in the making, including collaborative discussions with multiple agencies, repair design, multiple permit acquisitions, and contractor selections. The project will require aggressive revegetation to stabilize the bank. The large logs to be used were recruited from the newly constructed road path created during a recent timber harvest plan on the Soquel Demonstration State Forests. Logs will be intertwined with root wad bowls as footer logs. And the CEMEX Public Access Plan is a questionnaire. CEMEX Redwood Access, who wants to do what on 8,500 acres? The 8,500 acres formerly owned by CEMEX is virtually surrounded by protected lands. Coast Dairies adjoins it on the ocean side. Wilder Ranch State Park is a stone's throw away to the south. Henry Cowell's Fall Creek Unit is across the road to the east, and Big Basin State Park lies temptingly close to the north. With a few gaps here and there, it is the centerpiece of a 27,000-acre block of wild and protected lands in northern Santa Cruz County. No wonder so many people are itching to get out on it. That day when the gates are unlocked to the public for the first time in history is getting closer. This fall, the Land Trust launched a 2-year planning process for public access to this natural jewel. The conservation director, Brian Largay, is coordinating this work with our partners over the next 6 months or so. We will meet with stakeholders, hold community meetings, and solicit input online. Details on our outreach efforts will be on our website. So I don't happen to have that website, unfortunately. It is the Land Trust for Santa Cruz County. And we want to thank Jody Frediani for this month's forest update. For Jody Frediani is the forestry consultant for the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club and the chairman of Central Coast Forest Watch. And California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers have snagged a diver off of Catalina Island. I almost puked when I read this story. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers cited a 46-year-old Ventura man for using rubbing alcohol to force fish out of rocks and capture them to sell. The diver was cited for two fish and game violations, the use of a chemical while collecting marine aquaria, an unlawful take of marine aquaria at Catalina Island, which is prohibited by law. On the afternoon of November 13th, officers from the patrol boat Thresher observed a large recreational sailboat with commercial fishing license numbers painted on the stern anchored in Emerald Bay on the northeast coast of Catalina Island. Officers boarded the boat and found a man sport fishing. The angler told the officers that his partner was scuba diving. Officers entered the 62-degree water and observed a diver squirting a liquid later determined to be rubbing alcohol from a bottle into cracks of rocks. The liquid was forcing small fish, blue banded gobies, into the open water where the man would catch them with a small aquarium fish net and immediately put them in a small plastic receptacle attached to his scuba gear. The warden used a mask and snorkel from just below the water surface to watch the diver squirt the bottle twice. The warden then dove down, showed the diver his warden identification, and directed the diver to come to the surface. Before ascending, the diver left one of his squirt bottles on the rocks and attempted to drop a small mesh bag containing another squirt bottle. The warden retrieved both squirt bottles and the mesh bag. Once on the sailboat, the suspect told officers he was a licensed marine aquaria collector and his buyers were paying him $10 a fish. He stated that he did not know it is illegal to use rubbing alcohol to catch the small fish or that it is illegal to partake in marine aquaria collecting operations off of Santa Catalina Island. The diver had 63 goby fish in a small plastic receptacle attached to his gear. During the interview, officers saw another plastic sealed container beneath the boat. The second container was holding an additional 109 gobies. The fish were counted, photographed, and returned to the sea. The man's dive gear was seized and charges were filed with the Los Angeles County District Attorney. Marine aquaria laws that protect Catalina Island prevent collectors from depleting local species, such as the blue-banded goby around the island. Collecting marine aquaria from the ocean is legal, however, with the proper permits in the proper location. It is not, however, legal to use chemicals in aiding the capture. For more information, go to www.dfg.ca.gov. That's dfg.ca.gov. And a professor has sued to block logging at Lake Tahoe in this story by Scott Soner of the Associated Press. A renowned conservation biologist who has done research for the Forest Service for more than a decade is suing the agency to try to block logging in the mountains above Lake Tahoe. He says it's being done illegally under the guise of reducing wildfire threats that don't exist. Dennis Murphy, a Pew Scholar Research Professor in Biology at the University of Nevada, Reno, says the Forest Service is ignoring its own analysis of the low fire risk in the high-altitude old-growth forests on about 100 acres surrounding Echo Lakes, about 8 miles southwest of South Lake Tahoe, California. Cutting activities on the Pacific Crest Trail, Tahoe Rim Trail, and the scenic Lake Tahoe Basin are occurring where no material threat of wildfire exists at all, said Murphy, whose family has owned a cabin for three generations in the area on the edge of the Desolation Wilderness high atop the Sierra Nevada. The logging threatens the survival of the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog, which the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to be listed as an endangered species, said Murphy, past president of the Society of Conservation Biology. The project is within the area the agency proposed in April for designation as habitat critical to the frog, he said. In its zeal to implement the project, the Forest Service has disregarded these facts and is violating the mandatory procedures of the National Environmental Policy Act by blazing ahead according to the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Sacramento on November 6th. Murphy was the lead editor of the two-volume Lake Tahoe Watershed Assessment prepared for the U.S. Forest Service in the year 2000. He has served on three different panels for the National Academy of Sciences, including the Committee on Scientific Issues in the Endangered Species Act. His lawyer, Paul Wieland of Irvine, California, filed a motion on Thursday, I believe that was last week, seeking a temporary restraining order to suspend the logging operations and asked for a chance to present their case to U.S. District Judge Garland Burrell during an emergency hearing last Monday. But Burrell denied the request late Friday, saying Murphy had known about the project for months and should have made the request sooner if it were truly an emergency. That means the case will continue on a regular schedule with no trial date yet set. The Forest Service officials declined to comment and referred questions to the U.S. Justice Department officials in Sacramento who are representing the agency in the case. Lauren Horwood, spokesperson for the U.S. Attorney's Office there, told the Associated Press on Friday that she couldn't comment on pending litigation. Forest Service Supervisor Nancy Gibson, who oversees the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, said in a formal decision implementing the project in November of 2012 that it qualified for an exemption to a usually required environmental assessment or environmental impact statement. Gibson said there was no critical habitat identified or proposed for federal listed species within the project boundaries, but that changed in April when the Fish and Wildlife Service designated the critical habitat for the frog and proposed the endangered listing. Murphy's lawsuit says the Forest Service short-circuited the environmental review process by improperly invoking the exemptions months before notifying the public of the scope of the logging. And Tanzania has seized 797 elephant tusks and arrested some Chinese nationals in this story by Fumbaka Ngwanakilala and editing by George Ubalatsa and Janet Lawrence, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Police in Tanzania have arrested three Chinese nationals and seized hundreds of elephant tusks in the past week in anti-poaching raids in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam and the southern town of Matarwa. A total of 797 tusks were seized in three raids, officials said, representing the slaughter of about 400 elephants. 706 tusks were confiscated in Dar es Salaam on Saturday alone, said Chikambi Rumisha, a spokesman for the Natural Resources and Tourism Ministry of Tanzania. The tusks were found in sacks of garlic at the house of Chinese nationals. Police seized 89 elephant tusks in Mtwara last week, while two elephant tusks were found by authorities in Dar es Salaam yesterday, Rumisha said. Well-armed criminals kill elephants and rhinos for their tusks, largely due to increasing demand in China for ivory ornaments and folk medicine. Police say most of the tusks smuggled from the East African country end up in Asia. International trade in ivory was banned in 1989 after the population of elephants dropped from the millions in the mid-20th century to about 600,000 by the end of the 1980s. Last year, a Tanzanian member of parliament said poaching was out of control, with an average of 30 elephants being killed for their ivory every day. In August of 2011, Tanzanian authorities seized more than 1,000 elephant tusks hidden in sacks of dried fish at the Zanzibar port and destined for Malaysia. And Gabon troops have killed a poacher and arrested 34 others near an elephant park in this story reported by Jean Rovis Dabani, writing by Emily Farge, editing by Daniel Flynn and Andrew Heavens, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Gabonese soldiers killed a poacher and arrested 34 other illegal hunters near a national park, which is home to endangered forest elephants, the government said on Tuesday. The troops pursued the men close to the northern border with Cameroon on November 10th and 11th and shot one of them dead in a gun battle, according to the president's statement. The soldiers found the carcass of an elephant and a panther at the camp used by the poachers, who had also been mining for gold, it added. The heavily wooded Central African country is battling to save its forest elephants, thought to account for around half of the world's remaining population of 100,000 forest elephants. An estimated 11,000 of the elephants prized by ivory dealers for their hard, straight tusks have been killed in the Minkebi Park since 2004, the government said last February. Other countries are also stepping up efforts to curb the multi-billion dollar trade in illegal wildlife, much of which originates in Africa and is partly fueled by growing demand from Asia. In July, U.S. President Barack Obama signed an executive order to fight trafficking. Kenya and the Philippines have also destroyed stockpiles of contraband ivory. And California's lead ammo ban is urgent for dying condors. Tell the feds to help. A new historic ban on lead hunting ammo in California will spell relief from lead poisoning for California's wildlife, but the non-toxic ammo regulations won't be phased in until 2015 and won't take effect fully until July of 2019. Meanwhile, there have been an unprecedented condor death toll in California's Big Sur flock from lead poisoning in the last year. Researchers from the Federal Condor Recovery Team say the birds simply can't reproduce fast enough to make up for the numbers dying from lead poisoning. Relief from the state for condors, eagles, and other birds poisoned by spent lead ammunition won't kick in for another 6 years. What on earth can be done? Is there any other authority who could step in? Anyone at all? We at the Center for Biological Diversity would like to recommend a fully qualified candidate for the job with 40-plus years of experience in regulating lead, our very own Environmental Protection Agency. In fact, the federal agency, which has overseen the removal of lead from gasoline, paint, and kids' toys, happens to be celebrating National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. Who better to make sure lead is taken out of hunting ammo and prevent poisoning of a nation's wildlife, not to mention the families of hunters who eat lead-shot game? Folks, we think we have a winner. Yet the agency continues to fight efforts by the center and a broad coalition of partners to take toxic lead out of hunting ammo. Could it be a powerful gun lobby is enjoying more sway than scientists or the public? Could be. And three Caribbean plants have gotten protection after lawsuits brought by the center. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed Endangered Species Act safeguards for three rare plants in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico: Eggers agave, island brittle leaf, and the Puerto Rico manjack. All three plants are imminently threatened by land development and have been on the waiting list for federal protection for more than three decades. And that's all the time we have for news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is produced each week here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update, tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you happen to be in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to the new high-power KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, broadcasting now at a frequency of 90.3 FM. This show is rebroadcast there Monday nights at 9:30. If you'd like to download a podcast or listen to an internet stream of Radio for All, of the Earth First Update, go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, and search for Earth First Radio News. Don't forget the exclamation point. All right, that's it for the Earth First Update. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week.